Maybe I should have asked Velma Wallace about this, but what about the impact of ANCSA on the people here? And maybe people from out of town could tell me what it has been in their own villages, but have you gotten dividends from your regional corporation or your village corporation? Checks.
Sorry.
My name is Sam Peter. answering Mr. Burgess' question, as far as the regional corporation, we have received some, but in terms of the village corporation, none at all.
And that you're from the Fort Yukon?
Yes.
Well, one of the things Congress had in mind was that the native corporations would start up businesses in the bush, employing native people in those businesses, and then paying them dividends as shareholders. What about jobs employed by the native corporations?
I could answer that. As far as dividend payments, the regional corporation Doyon has made one dividend payment. The regional corporation, since ANCSA has been started in 1971, has not made any kind of dividend payments to the shareholders. This year and their year-end audit report, the GZ or Gochajee Board of Directors has authorized a dividend payment of $2 per share, and that's just being in the process. That's for the fiscal year. As far as for the employment, just for the last 2 years, they've been starting their subsidiary, like purchasing the utility company, the lodge operation, the airline industry, and the fuel company.
That's the village corporation?
Just the Kuchaja Corporation within an 18-month period.
It sounds like they're doing a lot of things then.
As far as for the local economics, they are eventually taking over or having a say in it. And as of the shareholder employment, that's the good part about it is that they do have 27 employees total.
Yeah, that sounds very good.
Nancy James, manager for GZ.
What do you, while you're there, what do you feel about this question of shares, and should people have the right to sell their shares if they haven't, you say they haven't had, they've had only one dividend from the regional corporation, I've forgotten.
They're going to.
Yeah. Well, suppose somebody says to himself, well, I haven't got anything out of this, so I think I should have the right to sell my shares in 1991 and keep the money, and that's my business. Or do you think there should be restrictions so that people can't sell their shares and the native corporations will not then fall into non-native hands? Or do you think the land should be transferred from the native corporations to IRAs or cooperatives or some other entity, leaving the corporations to carry on business, but making sure the land is safe? Any ideas about all that?
Well, let me at least try to answer your on shares. I think the main reason I haven't said, I wasn't anticipating on saying anything till toward the last, mainly because I'm also management for GEZ, and I always like to listen to other people, their perspective of how they look at corporations and what they expect out of it. But as far as for share selling of shares, I would be, as a shareholder and also management, I would be completely against it. And I would say that the board would be too, but like you said, it is up to the stockholder. And it is true that a couple of shareholders have said, well, I haven't got anything from GEZ Corporation, it belongs to me, so I'll sell it. I'm pretty sure that would happen. But I think if we had a communication, if we had more dissemination of information of what it would mean to sell your stocks in 1991, I think it would help the shareholders out there. I think the lack of communication just came out. I think there has been a lack of communication. Mainly, you just can't blame, I don't think, the corporate structure itself. You have to look at the education concept. I think ANSA was started in 1971, it's 11 years after. Yet unfortunately, it's not mandated. ANSA is not mandated as a requirement in the educational system. So as far as shares, I would be completely against it. As far as for land, I think that's an issue that, I think the biggest asset any corporation has, and the only thing that we really do have, is land. And as far as separating it, that's something that I can't comment on.
Yeah, well, thanks very much.
Couple of questions.
Yeah.
I'll just be here for a short time.
I can't see you there. But go ahead. Can you have your name anyway?
My name is Philip Solomon. I just got in here. I wasn't here all day. And I'll be leaving shortly. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. The first one is, I don't know what all this meeting involves, but I was born a little bit late for picking allotments, and I was wondering, I guess that's all done and put away with. Is that true?
Yes. You had to file for an allotment by December 18th, 1971, because ANCSA said there would be no more allotments. And so if you didn't file before December 18th, 1971, you're out of luck.
Okay, thank you. Just to fill you in a little bit, I've been in and out of the state for the past 5 years, and I've tried to, while in town, I've tried to get all the information and attend the meetings, and due to circumstances, I wasn't able to get filled in all the way, and had a lack of some, I lacked some knowledge on everything about 1991. I've been doing a lot of reading, though. And so, you see, it because of circumstances, it is possible that a person can miss out on information, you know, to be fully informed on what's going on. So there are people around that, no matter how long it was, circumstances kept them from being filled in.
Yeah.
And my second question was that in the lower 48s, when the Indians kept or had the North American continent, all the treaties were made and broken. And I was wondering if there's a chance that even though some people would sell out and others, maybe let's say half, would keep their land, I was wondering if there's a chance that the government or somebody might be able to say, hey, we're running a railroad through here and we need your land. Can you take another land? Would they be able to do that?
Yeah, the government has what's called power of eminent domain, and if there is some public purpose for which they want land, they can take land, but they have to compensate you for it. That's the answer to the second question. Pardon?
There's a provision in the Land Claims Act that the corporation wants to take land to federal government. There's a provision in the Land Claims Act.
Oh, yeah, you can trade land with the federal government.
That guess was the answer to you.
Well, that was an important point. And there are trades going on all the time. Not all the time, but there have been trades that the corporations have made with the government.
Well, thank you. That's all the questions I had.
Yeah, I could probably say a couple things. It's still on? Oh, okay. My name is Woody Salmon. I live here in Fort Yukon for the past year, but I'm originally from Chalkeetsuk, and I was the past president of the corporation up there for three years. There is... From being a small corporation with 98 shareholders, I think, and we've experienced our share of problems, and a lot of them were expressed tonight, but one of the things that the smaller Bush corporations, such as Chalkeetsuk, and was fairly, not very much, you know, money to get involved into big business, and with a lot of the people being from the village and hardly any from the, say, Fairbanks area. In that sense, it's hard to, you know, get a business where you deal with more people than other than the village business. It's hard to put out a profit in a small, you know, when you got a small local village business, it's not the same as where it's Fort Yukon or Kotzebue or Fairbanks. That's where I think the corporations were having problem developing business, try to get all geared up for 1991. And most of our money goes into like CD or, to draw interest off of the money that you put into the banks or Foster and Marshall or the other.
That's what Chalkeetsuk is doing.
At this time, yeah. You know, you have to put your money back over into Fairbanks or Seattle or, you know, wherever the big banks are. We're not using the money. We can't generate enough to, you know, stay in small villages and make as much as the interest. You're defeating the purpose of profit. You seem like you don't understand.
You mean if you try to start a business in a small village like Chalkeetsuk, you might lose money, and is that the point?
No, what I'm saying is that you start a business,
yeah,
but you'll make more money, whereas if you get that money out of that business and stick it in a bank, you know, that's, you got so high a cost to start out your business, and it'll take at least more than 20 years to get your money back. You know, it's not that, you know, for a small village, it's that problem, you know. You don't get your money back fast enough. And those are some of the problems I think the small villages are having. And they're sinking their money back into the bank, the main, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So where the money came from, actually. So that's, I don't know, it's kind of hard to realize, but for a small village, it's it is a problem, you know. And I've seen a lot of other villages that, you know, they never use their money there in a village. They use it somewhere else. Might be in Alaska National Bank, you know. It's just some, they use it somewhere where it's more profitable other than the villages. I think that's why, you know, we there's not that much businesses going up. Now, like if it was in Fairbanks, where you got, you know, a lot of variety of people and where you could start a business, but still there's, I don't know, that's, but that's one of the problems. I think the small villages are suffering from. And another thing, another problem is that we could only generate so much money, so much interest from that money that's been given to that village. And we run into problems such as land conveyance, where we have to spend for consultant, for the lands people, people that, you know, are expert in this field or supposedly are. And we have to pay them in order to get our land transferred. And that's taken a bite out of the shareholders' profit or dividend. And for bigger corporations like maybe GZ or, you know, high profit corporations, maybe it's not as much off their profit as if we're a small village. They just got, you know, a certain amount of money, and there it hurts them. And that's one of the problems we develop and try to get our land conveyance. And then there's problems in the ANCSA land law that we have to follow, like 14C, you know, conveyance to the local municipal or whatever they call it, the local government there, either a village council or city or whatever. There's problems in there that the corporation, with a small corporation, we have to fight the law that they set upon us, which, you know, there is taking another bite out of profit. Things like that, it, you just add up about four or five problems like that, you know, then where goes your profit? Back into the problems of the law that they develop. And a lot of concerns, in order to either express your concerns or get your concerns out, the experts, well, not the expert, the land people that, you know, or consultant, is the one that does know all these problems, and we're the one that's, you know, getting the axe, you know. it's the one that it comes down on the small guys, you know. And
have you conveyed your 14C3 lands to the municipality?
No, we haven't. We were in a process, I think, last summer, but it never went through. But there's some problems in it too, you know. And I'll just stop for there. I'll let.
Have you been able to pay any dividends?
No, we haven't. We've been, well, with what we got, we've been supporting what we have.
So, do you have any employees?
We do, yeah.
Two? But, did you say two?
No, I say we do, yeah. We do have some employees. But
when you were president, how many employees did you have?
We have two. We have the manager right now, and we have some other people associated with other businesses. But those are the problems I thought I just expressed. Their problems, and they're going to be there.
Yeah, they sure are. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Wally Flitt. I manage the land for the local Native Corporation. And I think tonight that I think we're trying to look for all the problems or any options that we might have to preserve our land and find some options in controlling our shares and then finding ways that will be beneficial to people that were shareholders, natives that are not shareholders of the corporation, but are probably the most people that will be benefited by this corporation and this ANCSA, this act that's been passed by Congress. In setting up all these regulations and policies and accomplishing this act is, we have a lot of problems in dealing with federal agencies, the state agencies, and everybody that reads the act tends to interpret the act on its own, and every time somebody reads the act, it has a different interpretation. And there's a. I don't know how we can accomplish this without a unified effort from all the shareholders. Because if you're going to be if you are going to transfer your lands or anything like that to a IRA council or anything like that, you have to get a 2/3 vote from all the outstanding shares. And on top of that, there'll be some shareholders that will not want to have that done, and then you have to pay those dissenters off, what they call a dissenters' rights. I don't think if you're going to be doing this, then there's no unity in doing this kind of things. What we need to do, I think, is that we need to reach out to the young people and the elders that we have left to work something out, because I'm pretty sure the elders are a lot more experienced in foretelling the future, and because for the reason that their elders have told them a lot of things that they haven't told us. And we need to go out and reach out to these elders and find out what those things are. And I guess that's as far as I'll go right now.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Back here to Mr. Salmon, sorry.
Yes, my name's Woody Salmon. I'd like to express one more point, is that they've passed the land claim 1971, and the experimental part will be over 1991. And since they're experimenting on us, I'm sure I don't know how to say it, but we've ran into problems in the corporation. Both the mother corporation and the other little corporations, we've ran into problems, and the law wasn't perfect, and it probably never will be. The chances of Well, actually, it seems like to me it's an experiment. And maybe the chances of rehashing the laws, maybe, you know, prior to 1991 of some sort, getting a lot of the little bugs out. And I think that somewhat, you know, maybe re-amend it or something, add a little, subtract a little. I think after 20, maybe 20 years of experience, you know, with the land claims, then I think people will be able to make a better law, a better decision for the future of our people and our land. And I think something like that, something in that area will be good for probably total Alaska. So I just thought I'd express that point.
Yeah, you know, when Congress set this up, their idea was that in 1991, people could sell their shares, and they would maybe take their shares in your corporation and go buy shares in a corporation in Anchorage or in Seattle, and that they would become investors like lots of other people in America, and that there would cease to be anything special about Native corporations. They'd have Native shareholders, non-Native shareholders, and Native people would start buying into other corporations that right now don't have any Native shareholders. So that's why they set it up, so that in 1991 people could say, okay, I'm going to sell my shares and get out of this. But as we all know, or most places I've been, Native people have said, well, we don't like that. We think that we should hang on to our land. What do you think is the best way of tackling that? Instead of waiting for somebody in Congress to say, I've got an idea, let's do it this way, what do you think? If you could wave a magic wand and set it right, what would you do?
Well, like I said, it seems like it was an experiment, you know. See who will fail and who will make it out of it. And, you know, first of all, when they started this off, you know, we're not business people, you know. And I'll say that for 50% of them. And that's what they push us into. They're forcing us to be what we're not. What we weren't in the beginning, you know. That's a fact we'll probably have to live with, you know. I mean, you know, we learn. Sure, we'll learn. And it may take more than 20 years, but we're going to learn. But by then, you know, what do we have? We might say we used to have 100 chairs, you know, but that's too late. But we're learning, you know. I'm not, you know, but... I think if they had a period, say like maybe 10 years to then re-amend what you have, you know. I mean, you know, take all the bugs out of the problem because they just gave it to us here, you know, and that's it, you know. You live with it, and it's it doesn't work out that way because Congress himself is not, you know, magic too, you know. They didn't see all these problems that they injected to us, you know. So they're just human beings like us, and
they saw them, but they didn't think they were problems. They thought, well, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, but evidently it is a problem. So anyway, that's about all I have to say on it.
Thanks. Thanks again.
My name is Sam Peter. Before the land claims became an act or was written into law or signed by the president, I've always got the impression that we had an option of either forming corporations and running our own business. The other one was going back to the IRA status. Might be wrong, but with these options, I've always thought, at the time, I thought that the IRA status would have been a much better choice. And as far as the, since we are in the corporation status, as far as the stocks that each one of us have gotten, which is 100 shares each, getting back to saying, as far as selling them, for myself, I have a lot of fears. I'm not well informed about the NSAC. And even now, even before 1991, I think there are a lot of agencies that are already, I'm sure that they got a piece of our stocks, such as the state, and probably the federal government does too. The reason for that is a lot of our Native people have gotten married. They're either intermarried or have gotten divorces, and they are liable to pay alimonies and all this stuff. And if they don't pay those, then I'm sure that the state sometime down the future will say that, you know, maybe we do own, maybe they do own about 25% of their stocks.
That's an interesting point. You're saying the state might want in 1991 to sell those shares to enforce the alimony payment. So.
I have a few questions to ask. These people that decide to...
Name again, sorry.
John Alexander. I have a few questions. One of them is, if some of these shareholders do decide to sell their land and everything, what's going to happen to them after that? I mean, are they going to... Do they just, you know, even the land they're living on and everything, do they just lose just everything that they have? Or, you know, what's going to become of them if they lose everything? And if they do decide to sell... These people that buy their land from them, what's going to, you know, what are they allowed to do? I mean, do they have limits?
Well, if you own a native allotment, you don't have to sell it, and you can't sell it unless the Secretary of Interior gives his consent. The same applies to restricted deeds in native town sites. You're just now distributing some village corporation land, and I think you're barred from selling that for a period of years. So what we're talking about is the native corporation land, and you don't own that land. You have shares. So if you sell your shares, you're not really selling any land that belongs to you. You're selling your interest in land that belongs collectively to all the people who are shareholders. So if a majority of people in this village sell their shares to, let's say, some non-native person from Seattle, then he will control the corporation and own the land. So that's why we keep coming back to this question of shares. I know it gets confusing, but that's the way it was set up.
A lot of this stuff that we're talking about, everything's confusing, especially to myself, and I'm sure for a lot of young people, is because things like this, as far as I know, is like, you know, I've just recently heard about 1991 and what's going to happen and all this, and it's something that, you know, should be taught to us, you know, like for myself, so I'll know what to do and how I can explain it to the younger people is what, you know, what's going to happen in 1991 and how it's going to affect them and what they can do about it and things like that, you know, should be taught to us. I meant, you know, like Velma was saying earlier, some information written down on paper in plain English without having to use get so technical, you know, because sometimes you get some information and all the information that you'd get is so high word for some of us that don't quite understand it, and then you get these things that, you know, you don't know what they're talking about, and you just get things that are, you know, just some things that you understand, but most of it, it's so technical that you don't know, you don't understand what it is.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons the material that you get, the papers that you get, the newsletters that you get, if you do, from Native corporations is because they have to comply with various laws, and often the material they send out has to be reviewed by a lawyer to make sure they're complying with the law, and in the end it winds up reading like ANCSA itself. That's really nobody's fault. That's just the way it's set up. One of the things you might... Oh, did you have another question, Mr. Alexander?
No.
One of the things you might think about is this. Suppose 1991 came and you could sell your shares, and suppose half the people in this village sold their shares and got some money and the other half didn't. So the half that the people that didn't sell their shares would then control the corporation and the land, not to mention the airline and the other things. But when it comes to the land, if everybody... uses it for subsistence, but half of the people sell their shares, then the people that didn't sell their shares might start to say, well, why are we letting them use that land? They sold their shares, they got out. If in 1991 half the people sell and half the people don't sell, it could really divide the village. It's a kind of a problem that... That worries me, and but there it is. That, you know, that's human nature. Often people say, "Well, they got out, they sold their shares, and they've got a new snowmobile or a new truck, and we kept our shares because we didn't want this land to be lost. So now we're going to insist that the non-shareholders can't use the land." Well, that's something else to think about.
Another thing that's really concerned me is that I've been involved in a lot of things here in this community, especially with the Native Dance Group and everything, as well as learning a lot of history of Fort Yukon. And one thing that I've learned about it was that our elderly people has done so much things in order to survive traveling and a long time ago that... I mean, I, for myself, I'm not going to sell my stock. You know, that's one thing that I've already gotten taken care of. It's because it has too much here. There's too much in this land, and in my feelings about it, about our people and everything, our heritage, where we come from, and all this is deep rooted inside me because I've learned all of this stuff. And something that I'm, you know, that, you know, should be held on to. I mean, when 1991 comes on, I'm sure, you know, that's 7 years from now, and a lot of our people should know about these things and, you know, should actually know what they're, you know, what the Congress is going to do, and all this should be taken, you know, I mean, a lot of that should be getting out, you know, and explained thoroughly to these people so people will understand. And, you know, I mean, if somebody comes and says, hey, I'm going to sell my stock because they said we can get a lot of money for it, you know, I mean, they, you know, a lot of people is going to do that because it's going to be just money that's involved, and they're not going to realize, you know, what they're doing and that their values and things. I mean, that's one of my concerns about losing this land. So that's
it. Did you want to say something? Yeah. Do you want to? Do you mind putting it on the mic?
Sarah Knutson, Gochashire Corporation stockholder. We talk about land quite a bit. I was wondering what will happen if we just put all our land in a land bank. Would we be covered under ANCSA from taxes and get some kind of protection from them? And our shares, I believe that we should will our shares to our children or whoever, so it's not tied up in estate and probate forever and ever, and nobody has the right to vote that.
Let me answer the question about the land bank first.
One of the provisions under ANCSA?
Yeah, one of the provisions under ANCSA is for what's called the land bank. And that means that a corporation could decide to put its land in the land bank. And if it's in the land bank, it doesn't mean it goes into a bank, but its land stays where it is, but it's treated as if it were in the land bank. And if it's in the land bank, it goes in for 10 years and it can remain there for another 5 years. And if it's used for subsistence, it can't be taxed. So that's an important feature of the land bank. One of the problems with the land bank is that it means the land will, if it is next to federal land, be managed by the federal government. The other thing is that if the corporation goes bankrupt, then whoever takes over the corporation gets the land in the land bank. If people sell their shares and the corporation is taken over by somebody who comes into the village and buys up the shares, then it doesn't matter that the land's in the land bank. The land belongs to the new owner. So the land bank protects you against taxation of land. It doesn't afford protection against
bankruptcy
or corporate takeover through buying up shares. But it's an important provision, and I'm glad you brought it up. You had another question that I escapes me now.
On our shares, if we have to say I have 100 shares and I left it to my children that's born after 1971, now if I didn't will my shares to them, my shares will be tied up in estate if I didn't have a will, and could be tied up in the probate forever and ever. But if I willed it to someone, you know, they can use it as their voting shares in their corporation. But if they don't, if you something happened to you and you die and you don't have a will, your shares are tied up in court. It could be 10 years before they settle it or decide who's entitled to the inheritance of your shares.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's better to make a will in writing. Clarence Alexander mentioned a case today where there was a will, but it wasn't in writing, and I believe in Alaska a will has to be in writing. And so it's better to make a will and leave your shares to the people you want to have them. I don't know. If you don't leave a will, the shares are divided up according to state law, usually among your husband or your children. I don't think they would be tied up for 10 years, but it's certainly better to make a will.
I'm taking this Alaska Native Land Claim course through rural ed here in town, and one of our students, this is through audio conference, our instructor is Fred Bigjim, and one of the questions that keep coming up over and over was that, what right did Russia have to sell Alaska to begin with? Who gave them the right?
Well, the